Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dot Foil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. Later in the program, we're going to be talking to the folks from Big Brothers Big Sisters. Been hearing tabla music of Charanjit Chaturlal, who joins us today in the Radio Cafe. He's a master tabla player who is teaching in Santa Fe this week. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
And Melissa Sproul Singh is here. She's the director of the Ganesh Academy of Indian Arts, which I am just learning about, which is here in Santa Fe, just relocated from Georgia.
Right. Thank
welcome,
you.
Welcome to the Radio Cafe. So tabla, explain to us what is the tabla?
Actually, it's a pair, two pairs of pieces, which we call tabla. The left hand is we call baya, and it also means left side, baya. And the right hand is known as tabla. Tabla, the right hand drum is made of wood, and the left hand drum is made of metal, copper or brass.
And so that gives a very distinct sound to the two
yes,
hands.
Yes, it is totally. This is a bass drum. The left hand is a bass drum. And right drum is a tribal, means what do you call?
Treble.
Treble drum. Yes.
Right, right. So what is the history of this instrument? How far back does it go?
Oh, it goes many, many, many years back. Maybe 1,000 years old. Yes.
And do we, I mean, obviously, with an instrument that's that old, a lot of it has been passed down in a lineage from one person to another. Do you have any idea how it was played 1,000 years ago? Is the notation still existent?
Yeah, that is the notation which has been followed for all these years. We learn it from our masters and then give it to our students further. So the language is same what it used to be thousands years back, you see? And should I speak something about the language?
Yeah.
Okay.
When you say language, the language of the tabla, what does that mean?
When we say theta, I'm just giving a small word, theta. So the other person will understand, and it will sound, when I'm playing on tabla, it will sound theta. Ta, it will sound ta. Tirakita, it will sound tirakita. Dhere dhere kita tak. So it will sound like dhere dhere kita tak.
So you learn to say it in with your
mouth yes,
and
yes.
Play it.
Play it, the same thing.
Can you maybe say a few, I don't know if they're called sentences or phrases?
Yes, I will say. First I will say a simple one, so it's easy for people to understand. It's a Dilli Gharana Kaida, we call it Kaida. Dhatit, dhatit, dhadhatit, dhage tinna kinna, tatit, tatit, dhadhatit, dhage dhinna kinna. In fast, we have to play. And this is the framework of that piece, or we call it kaida. And then we improvise in this. Like dhatita dhatita dhada. So we'll say dhatita dhatita dhada dhatita dhatita dhada dhatita dhatita dhada dhatita dhagita nagina. We're improvising dha. Dhatita dhatita dhada dhatita dhada dhatita dhada dhatita dhatita dhada dhatita dhagita dhada dhatita dhagita. Like this, we'll improvise one. Then the second phrase comes like theta. So we'll improvise theta. Dhatita dhatita dhada theta theta dhada theta. Theta dhada theta theta dhada theta dhada theta. Theta dhatita theta dhatita dhada theta. I'm just breaking it smaller. So like this. Then we have many other bowls like this. Interesting one is tirakita. Tirakita takata. Tirakita takata tirakita takata. Like this. So there are many, many phrases.
And so when you're a young person learning to play, you learn the hand movements and you learn the words at the same time.
Yes, yes. We have to do both together. Then only if you remember, then only we'll play. And then you have to mastery over it. Then you can improvise on those particular framework. There's a small framework which we have to improvise in that. That is how.
That is how you learn tabla. Now, you learned from your father, I guess, who was a very famous tabla player.
Yeah, he was the first internationally tabla player of our country. He was the first one who bought in tabla instrument to West and to Europe, to America, to Australia, everywhere.
And how was he received? I mean, when was he doing this?
In 1955. His first visit to European country and American country was in 1955.
And I would imagine that in that time, there were a lot of people, even educated people, who'd never heard that kind of music before.
Yeah, never, never. That was the first experience to the Western about the Indian drums.
And how did they receive it? What happened then? Did they embrace it?
They got crazy. They were mad after him. He was so well known. He was in people called him incarnation of God of music that time, So he was very, very well received, and till date people remembers him, and there are so many recordings of his in America, in Europe, everywhere, more than India. So because that time India was not having so much of recording this thing facilities, maybe they were not, Indian music, okay, it's Indian music. So it's our thing. So it was like this. In foreign countries, it was taken, it is an ancient instrument and all those that of things, So they took it more, seriously. Something like that.
Yeah. And started studying it.
Yeah, studying it also. Many people learned with him. There was a very famous drummer, I think so, Milt Holland, something like that. I think he also learned, and he tried to explain. And the first fusion concert, you can say, but it in India we can call it Jugalbandi, two percussionists playing together, or two instrumentalists playing together, So that was the first ever fusion in West, India and America, was with Lord Sir Philly Joe Jones, very famous drummer of America. He and my father played together first time in 1955.
Very interesting.
And that recording still exists at in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to Charanjit Chattopadhyay about the tabla. Traditionally, how many people are playing when somebody's playing the tabla? Is it a solo instrument?
No, it is an accompanist instrument. All the drums are always accompanied instrument, but in India and abroad now, it has been played solo also. And one more thing about my father, he made the first tabla solo record in all music. His was the first solo tabla record ever happened.
Yeah. Now, again, traditionally, was this a music that was played on social occasions or religious occasions? What was the occasion for the music?
See, music all over the world is played socially also, and for festivals also, for everything. So it was, in India also it is like this. We have concerts, we have occasions where music is played in everywhere, like, wedding time, or festival time, and for it's a very good thing in India that we have different music for different festival, different season, different timing. In the morning something else is played, in the afternoon something else is played, in the evening, late night. So we have different ragas also.
And the tabla instrument is always, the two drums are always a part of it.
Part of it, yeah. Without, it's rhythm and tune goes together. Wherever, means they can play solo also, it's not that. But rhythm and music, you know, it goes together always. Without rhythm, you can't play the music. Or if you, with only music, you know, without rhythm becomes half.
Right, right.
It's like male and female, you can say. It's a couple.
Melissa, you are the director of the Ganesh Academy of Indian Arts. What's that all about? What do you teach?
I teach Odissi-style Indian classical dance, which I studied for about 10 years in India. And I have also learned from Guruji tabla for several years. So he has authorized me to begin teaching beginners.
Very interesting. How did you, an American, find that kind of music and get interested in it and to that level?
It was when I was a teenager and I was exposed to Indian dance and classical Indian music through the yoga and meditation community. And I liked it so much, it was as if I had learned it in some previous lifetime or something. And I went to India as soon as I graduated from high school and didn't come back for 6 years.
Really? And were just studying dance the whole time?
Yes, I was very, very taken with it, and I took to it quite naturally. I felt like I had found my calling, and I've stayed with it all these years and continued to teach and continue to learn every time I go back and visit India, which I try to do every other year, if not every year.
Were there other Americans and Westerners studying at the time that you were doing that?
Yes, there was a small community of us at the time, and that community has continued to grow over the years. And what used to be a very rare and hardly known art form, such as Odissi dance, today I think is much better known. In fact, there must be Odissi dancers in every state of the U.S. and every country in Europe. And
what is Odissi specifically? What does that mean?
Odissi is from the state of Orissa, and my teacher came from Orissa and learned this in his childhood and developed it over the years. He has passed away now, but his daughter will be visiting in November, and Ganesh Academy will be hosting her as well.
We're talking to Melissa Sproul Singh and tabla player Charanjit Chatterlal. So you live in New Delhi, India, yes. And you come to the United States and you travel,
yes,
teaching.
Yes.
How good are your students in the West compared to people in India who presumably have been playing it since they were very small?
Yeah, see, it depends on the student to student. Music is such a thing, any art or anything is such a thing, how much you put into it. So that much you become better. So there are many students who are playing very good. There are many students who are, you know, reasonably good. So it depends in their input, how much they are putting into.
And how important is it that the student visit India and be immersed in Indian culture and Indian music?
See, if you think that way, in any art form, it is always good to go into that country and feel that atmosphere. And especially Indian music, you have to stay with your teacher, you have to be around him and try to understand those things. It's not merely learning in Indian music, it is, you know, feeling also and understanding that thing. That is how you will able to express your feelings. Otherwise, if you have a Western feeling and playing Indian classical music, your feeling is Western and thinking is means trying to do something, you see. So it is always said, and Indian music is not written like, you see. You have to be with your teacher to understand it in a better way.
Now, you learned this music and this tradition from your father, who's a great, mm-hmm, player and teacher, and you're passing it on to your own son.
Yes, it always happens like this. And in fact, I was very lucky to learn from my father. But later on, because my father expired very young, he was hardly 40 when he expired, So I had the fortunate luck to learn with his guru.
Uh-huh.
And after 2 years, my father's guru also was no more. So his guru was still alive. So I learned with him also for some time.
Oh my! So you went two generations back.
Back. So that is very different thing, you know, which generally doesn't happen with many artists.
Right.
But I was lucky to do this, you know,
and
get
then
the opportunity.
You've passed it on to your son, who's lucky enough to have you and have become an adult. And does he teach and travel as well?
Yes, he's traveling. Maybe day after tomorrow, he'll be going to Sweden for his concerts. And later on, he will be joining me in America after 2 weeks.
Now, do women play tabla at all?
Yes, they do play. Yes, they do.
In India as well as your students abroad?
Yes, yes.
Is that traditional or is that something that's sort of come up in the 20th century?
It has come up now, but it is not a traditional, but it's an interest. Women can also do the same things which men do. So why not?
Right.
And there are a lot of women playing in India now.
So, Melissa, you are the director of the Ganesh Academy of Indian Arts, which is at ganeshacademy.org on the internet. And you were here in Santa Fe teaching classes anybody can take.
Yes, I'm here year-round, except when I go to India for a month or two.
Right.
And I bring my teachers here not only... now Guruji's here. We're also preparing for his next visit, which will be 6 months from now. So the key idea is that people can learn enough during a few weeks with a master such as Guruji and then carry on their practice until he returns the next time, get some more lessons, and again continue their practice and check in with me in the meantime for a refresher.
Melissa Sproul Singh is the director of the Ganesh Academy of Indian Arts, and Charanjit Chaturlal is a master tabla player who can be found at chaturlaltabla.com. And if you have trouble spelling that, just go to my site, santafe.radiocafe.org, and I will provide a link. Thank you both so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Oh, and the phone number at Ganesh Academy is... area code 478-457-5354. And we will put a link to that on the website.
Thank you so much, Mary Charlotte.
Thank you.
Thank
you. It was
nice
to be here.
And maybe let's go out with a little more music.
Sounds like a great idea.
Excellent. Delighted now to welcome back to the program Andrea Fisher Merrill. She is the CEO of Big Brothers Big Sisters of Northern New Mexico, and Jane Bernard, who's a volunteer with Big Brothers Big Sisters. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So we have had you on the air, you know, from time to maybe about every year or so since I've been doing this program. But for those listeners who have never heard of Big Brothers Big Sisters or heard of it, don't know what it is, give us just a rundown of what this wonderful organization does.
I would love to do that. Basically, our goal is to change the trajectory of children's lives through one-to-one relationships with caring, committed, carefully screened adults, because there are just an awful lot of kids out there in northern New Mexico who, even though their parents may love them very much, just need a little extra adult attention. They need to be able to envision a way to live that's maybe a little bit different than how they grew up. And that's what we do. We work with kids ages 5 through 18, and we match them with adults. They're usually referred by their parents or sometimes by the school or relatives. And on occasion, we've even had kids refer themselves, which is kind of cute.
Because they heard about it in school?
They heard about it in school.
Or on the radio?
They have or on the radio, yeah. They have a friend that's matched, something like that. When that happens, interview them, and then we look through the volunteers that we have ready to be matched and put together a match. And it's really, really exciting to see what happens when those matches are made. It just can be very life-changing.
Do you have people on staff who are good matchmakers?
Absolutely. In fact, if we weren't doing this, maybe we should do a dating service.
I know, because matchmaking, it's a real, it takes a kind of intuition, as well as you can look at all the stats, but sometimes you just get a feeling that this person would go well with that one.
It absolutely does. It's amusing to watch, because, you know, you would think somebody comes in, they said, this is who I want to be matched with, and as a volunteer, and the child and the parents say, this is who I want to be matched with, and on paper it might look one way, but the staff that we have are just intuitively good at looking through those things and saying, yes, but above and beyond that, I know what this child needs. And I know who this volunteer can work with. And one interesting example is that sometimes we will match women with boys because, as we've talked about before, we never have enough men who volunteer. And so we have boys who, on occasion, will have to wait for as much as 2 years. And we always ask the parents up front, would you be willing to have your boy matched with a woman? And a lot of times the moms will say, no, I think I really need a guy as a volunteer.
Do you have situations where there's a single mother who kind of wants a male energy in their son's life?
Sure. And sometimes we'll look at it and we'll agree that that's just exactly what's needed. But other times we'll think, huh, there are some other guys in this boy's life, maybe an uncle, maybe a teacher, other neighbors that seem to be pretty active in the boy's life. He just needs some extra time. And sometimes we'll come across a woman who would be great with a boy, especially some of the younger boys. And she may really like to do sports. She may like to do very active kinds of things that a boy might want to do.
He may be not the stereotypical boy.
Or he may be not the stereotypical boy. I mean, some of the boys that we match love to go to art museums, for example, and do arts and crafts and things. So if we sense, or not me, because I'm not so good at this, it's the program staff that are, but if they sense that they've got somebody that really would be, a boy that would be great with a woman as a mentor, they'll go to the mom and say, look, would you think about this? We're not going to try and talk you into it, but just think about it. And it's really incredible. A couple years ago, our big sister of the year was matched to a little boy who just thought she ruled the world. Matchmaking is a real big part of it.
And did that relationship continue for a long time?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We ask a year's commitment, but we always hope for more than that. And right now our average, we have two kinds of matches. The community-based matches are one-to-one matches between an adult and a child where they can go anywhere in the community once they're screened, because we check driver's license and all that stuff. Those folks spend several hours a week, two to four times a month together, and they're typically matched for around 2 years. But we just graduated two matches last year where the boys were matched when they were 7 and 8, and they graduated from high school, still matched to the same big. They're both going to UNM, and it's just really a very heartwarming story to see when that happens.
We're talking about big brothers and big sisters.
The second program that we have is school-based mentoring, and that's a great program for people who want an introduction to mentoring but have more limited time. It's an hour a week throughout the school year, and it's a great opportunity to work with elementary school kids, and Those matches, we ask for a year commitment, but right now I'm very pleased to say most of our school-based matches are lasting 16 months. So,
Are they doing academics, or what are they doing in the schools?
A little bit of everything. They can spend up to half their time tutoring, and that works out well, but a lot of these kids in the beginning would rather do something else, play games or just talk. Go out and do stuff on, like shoot hoops. Some of the kids that we work with in the school have had enough tutoring experiences that as soon as you say anything about that, they'll give you real pushback. But once a relationship forms, then they'll actually ask for help with homework, and then it's a much easier way to kind of help with that, with those academic needs. And it's so critical. I have just released a list of, I believe it's the 200 worst schools in the United States, high schools, they're talking about, that there's going to be a real push to work on from a wide variety of angles. And unfortunately, four of those are in our service area.
Good heavens.
Yeah, yeah. So having an adult who's there, who cares, who has gotten through school themselves, to be a role model can make a big, big difference, can help a kid whose family may not have gone through that or whose parents may be real intimidated by the school system. It just can help kind of problem solve in a lot of ways. And that relationship then can pull through in ways that are really exciting. I know Jane here is a great example of a situation where by her presence in the life of a child, I think it really shifted big time how that young woman's ideas about school developed.
Well, Jane Bernard, tell us your story, because you have a real lovely success story of being a big sister.
Well, thank you. Corrine and I were matched when she was in the sixth grade. I think she was 11 years old. And she was living with two parents, her mom and her stepdad. And her parents really cared about her, but her mother was not well and didn't have a lot of extra time and energy. They lived in low-income housing. And Corrine is a really remarkable person. And I think she had dreams for herself. But by spending time with me, she got exposure to a whole other world, and her dreams really expanded and got a whole lot bigger. And she is now living in Salt Lake. She's the first person in her family to graduate from college. She went to Adams State, where she actually served as student body president her senior year.
That's a great place.
Yeah. And she had a phenomenal experience there. She studied pre-law. And now she's running the student services for a computer science college in Salt Lake City. She's a really dynamic, big-hearted, smart, interested, compassionate person. And, you know, she had all those ingredients to begin with, but she just really needed someone to spend a little extra time with her. And when you talk about what do you do with a match, how do you spend your time, so much of it is just spending time with them. It almost, in a way, doesn't matter what you do. Just to know that someone cares and someone is interested in them and their life. I mean, we did a real variety of things together, but probably one
Didn't
of...
Didn't you take her to the opera?
That was our first date, so to speak. She was in the sixth grade, and she had no idea what opera was about. And she was pretty shy, and I think she was a little bit overwhelmed meeting me for the first time and then going to the opera. We saw the Countess Maritza. It went until really late in the evening. And what I remember most about that opera is by the third act, I was struggling to keep my eyes open, and she was sitting on the edge of her seat. She was so thrilled with the whole thing, the staging, the costumes, the singing. She's really passionate about music, too. And it just rocked her world. So she was very interested in the arts, which was really fun. But probably some of my favorite memories with Corrine, I would pick her up. We'd go to a park near where she lived, usually after dark. And we'd hang out in the swings, and we'd talk. And I'd bring my dog, who she adored, and we'd walk the dog and just visit, and I'd ask her what was going on with her, and she'd tell me about school and friends. She had a lot of issues with, or really challenging issues with her friends. She, when I first met her, she had friends in this housing complex that she lived in. And in the sixth grade, things were pretty level. But as time went on, most of her friends either got pregnant or dropped out of high school or both or got involved in with boyfriends that were got them into trouble. And so we spent a lot of time talking about those things. And it was, you know, I remember very clearly Corrine's probably her junior year, standing with her in the bedroom of one of her best friends. Her best friend had kitten posters on the wall and was holding a brand new baby and had just dropped out of high school.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
So that was her community. And that didn't happen for her. You know, that was a really powerful experience for me and something that I'll never forget. Which brings me to, you know, my relationship with Corrine was phenomenal for Corrine. It changed her life. We were matched for 7 or 8 years until she became 18, although we're still very much in each other's lives. But it was a really rich experience for me, too, and life-changing in many ways. You know, I got a window into a world that was very different from my own. I'm very friendly with her parents, and I became very friendly with her circle of friends, and they really mean a lot to me. And it was really enriching to see someone who, in sixth grade, was really shy. And at the time, she did have dreams. Like I said, she wanted to be a teacher. But to watch her unfold and develop into this dynamic, passionate, compassionate person who's very interested in social justice, in the arts, in helping others. She became a peer counselor at Santa Fe High School.
I hate to say it, but she sounds a lot like you.
Well, when Andrea was talking about people being really intuitive within the organization about
putting people together. They saw somebody saw it from the beginning.
Yeah, they really hit it out of the park, I think. We were really a perfect match. And, you know, I don't have a sister, and I really consider Corrine to be my sister.
Yeah.
We still talk on the phone regularly. I don't see her as much as I wish I did, but we're still very much in each other's lives. And she's an only child. So for her to have a connection like she does with me is really important and enriching for her.
I think there's also, there's a lot of people, both women and men, who really never wanted to have children, but they wanted very badly to be an aunt or an uncle, and sometimes are an aunt or an uncle. And having a relationship like that, where you're not the primary 24/7 caregiver, but you really can form that kind of a relationship and do fun things that you just wouldn't necessarily do with your parents.
Exactly. It is really special, and I don't have any. I have stepchildren, but I don't have any children of my own. And also, it gave me an excuse to go to softball games. I went to softball games and choir, you know, performances, and I got to watch her graduate from Santa Fe High, and we did things like swinging on the swings, you know, which I have to tell you is really a lot of fun, but it's not something that I really do with my friends.
Right. So we're talking about big brothers, big sisters. Not too long ago, I had somebody on who was talking about a campaign to get 100 men in 100 days to be big brothers. How did
go? Well, it's still ongoing.
It hasn't been 100 days yet, I think.
No, it hasn't been 100 days yet. But we definitely are getting response. I'm not sure if you spoke to Ben Chavarria, but it was very exciting to me to see that he was the first match out of that that set of folks. And speaking with Ben yesterday about how well his match is going, and he pointed out that from his perspective, this is his chance to take the lessons that he learned as a kid growing up in a tough part of Santa Fe having some gang experience and making some really poor choices, and then running into some mentors who helped him go through that to the point where he's now a member of the Santa Fe Police Department. And he said he feels like if he can take those experiences and help a young man not have to go through quite so much to get to the other side.
Right.
He really hopes he can. And so the 100 Men in 100 Days campaign, it's moving forward. I've been watching the interviews happening very steadily in our Santa Fe office. But, boy, we need more. We definitely need more.
Gentlemen listening, please step up. Thank you very much.
Please, 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 please. And just in case you're listening from another part of northern New Mexico, we do serve Santa Fe, Los Alamos, Rio Arriba, Taos, San Miguel, Mora, and McKinley counties. You may recall that when we first were talking about, 9 years ago, it was only Santa Fe County.
Yeah.
But we're now out in all those areas, and boys need mentors in all of them.
Big Brothers Big Sisters has been around for a while. Do you have any people who were once little brothers and sisters who've now become big brothers and big sisters to other people?
We do, and it's always really gratifying to see that. I don't have the names at the tip of my tongue, but it's been really meaningful to see when those young folks come in, not so young now, and say, you know, I benefited from having somebody in my life when I was small, and now I really want to be able to give back. It's really inspiring, and it's equally inspiring to see some of the littles who have been willing to step up and say, you know, I was a little, and I'm in a very different place now. I always like to give a shout out to Chris Valdez of Tecolote Cafe. He's the manager there, and he's been a really big proponent of Big Brothers Big Sisters because he says it literally saved his life.
Now you, Andrea, of course, were also a big sister yourself.
I was.
And that was how you got into all of this.
That was how I got into it. I was not a formal big sister in my first relationship. I have been since. But the young woman, and again, not at all so young, who I was first involved with when she was 12. I'm still good friends with her on Facebook, and she too. Facebook's amazing. She's now a grandmother. I'm not yet.
Oh, my goodness.
And she's age appropriate to be a grandmother. She raised two great kids, both in college now. Her son, who's the dad back from the service and returning to college, and you know, she still will contact me saying, okay, what do I do in this situation?
Oh, that's so sweet.
Oh, my goodness.
And she was a real support to me, too, when I went through some challenging times about 10 years ago when I was transitioning out of a marriage. You know, it's just amazing how the relationships form and people
evolve.
Support each other.
Yeah,
exactly.
And I could say the same for Corrine, too. She supported me through some really, you know, through some bumps in the road along the way.
Yeah.
Very interesting. So Big Brothers Big Sisters of Northern New Mexico, you are this year the recipient of the beneficent generosity of the Mayor's Ball. It's the 12th anniversary of the Mayor's Ball. Jane, you're on that committee. What's that all about?
Well, the Mayor's Ball is an annual event at which a local nonprofit is selected to showcase their program to the community. So it's an event. It's put on by whatever charity is selected. This year, we have the good fortune to be selected. It's going to be a heck of a party.
And that's the main thing.
So everyone out there, you're listening, you should buy a ticket.
And so you people buy a ticket. They come to the Mayor's Ball, have a wonderful time.
Time.
I went 1 year. It was
really fun. So there's a cocktail reception, a silent auction. There's going to be some phenomenal food prepared by Santa Fe's. Some of Santa Fe's top chefs. And, yes, the mayor and Carol Rose will be there, too.
Uh-huh.
So, and there'll be live music, and there'll be a live auction as well. So it's a really wonderful opportunity to come out, enjoy your evening, support Big Brothers Big Sisters, and get a little bit of a tax donation at the same time.
Uh-huh.
So
and proceeds
also
benefit Big Brothers Big Sisters.
Yes, the proceeds benefit Big Brothers Big Sisters, and Thornburg Investment is one of our big sponsors for the event, so they're involved as well.
And you talk about things coming full circle. The band that we'll be playing is the Wise Guys, of whom Sam Baca is a member. And anybody out there who remembers Big Brothers Big Sisters from 30 years ago, Sam Baca was the first ever director. And he has very generously volunteered the time of the Wise Guys to come in and play. In addition to that, I've wanted to be part of a gala for Big Brothers Big Sisters for a long time, and I always knew if we were going to throw a party, we wanted to throw a really darn good party.
And this is going to be.
We're expecting up to 500 people, we are looking at the auction items alone. I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to bid on. We've got confirmed trips to Portland, Hawaii, Canada, Santa Monica, farmhouse in New Hampshire, vacation place in New Jersey on the shore.
Hoboken.
yeah, right. a bunch of others coming in. So it's going to be really, really fun. And the food, as Jane is pointing out, is going to be phenomenal. Pranzo's, Casa Sena,
Amavi,
Rio Chama,
Ristra.
It's all being coordinated by Chef Carmen from Saffron Catering. And so instead of just being a bunch of different dishes, it's going to be a wonderfully coordinated family-style meal with all those restaurants and more. And then in addition to that, Southern Wine and Spirits is going to support some of the liquid part of the party, and so we really feel as though, I mean, we're talking about the party part. The other piece that I think is going to be amazing is the program. From my heart, I can say that anytime you get our littles up there, and we're going to have some of the today's littles and some...
Actually, you could come and see Kareem, because she's going to participate. She's going to be up there on stage.
Yeah. And, that's enough to sell me.
our theme is It's a Big Little World, which works very well, very sweet. And also, I want to let people know, if they want to purchase tickets, they can call 983-8360. Tickets are $150 a piece, or you can buy a table for $1,500 for you and 9 of your friends.
Excellent. And a lot of companies do that, so there would be a bank or another kind of company that has its own table, and
Correct.
Some of their employees show up and things like that.
And we're also still looking for wonderful auction items. If there are folks that want to support Big Brothers Big Sisters but not by coming to the party, this is a chance to call us up and say, look, I can donate this or I can donate
that.
Yeah,
and don't have to donate a trip to Hoboken. You can donate a vase or something.
Exactly, yeah.
A massage.
Uh-huh. Right. We're talking to Andrea Fisher Merrill and Jane Bernard of Big Brothers Big Sisters. Now, there's also Native American and Hispanic initiatives within Big Brothers Big Sisters.
There are. One of the things that we started looking at shortly after I came was that while we were providing good services, we weren't reaching all segments of the community equally. And so the first thing we did was to coordinate locally and then help nationally a Hispanic initiative. And our goal there was to change the face of our agency in all ways, not simply by getting more kids involved, but more Hispanic volunteers, more Hispanic board members, more staff, making sure that all of our materials were culturally appropriate and that our staff were trained. And so then about 3 years ago, we got approached by our national office to work on a Native American initiative. I still laugh at that because the fellow who approached us from national said it should probably be easier to do. And knowing our local culture, I realized that it was going to be a lot more complicated to do, but very, very worthwhile. So since that time, we have increased our Native American matches from 3% to, last I looked, 13%. And that includes having a Native American staff member, having more appropriate materials, And also working with other agencies in the state to form a Native American Advisory Council. And we have representatives from McKinley, from our resource board there, and then also Valerie Lyon here from 8 Northern Pueblo has been very involved from that end. We're working hard to coordinate outreach to Navajo Nation through a partnership with two or three other Big Brothers Big Sisters agencies, and then 8 Northern, Valerie's been opening a lot of doors. I presented about 2 months ago to the Council of Governors at 8 Northern, and they're putting together a letter of support for us. And it's really very meaningful to us because we don't want to be doing this as outsiders being intrusive. For both our Hispanic and Native American initiatives, we want to do it from the inside, where we're being advised by people who know better than we do, and that we're very serious about what we're doing. And that's meant that our mentors are much more diverse than they used to be, too. And, you know, just as we were talking about earlier, that some boys need men in their lives, some of our Native American and Hispanic kids really, really want a mentor from a culturally similar background.
Right.
And so it's been a hard reach because though the concept of mentoring is very, very familiar in both Hispanic and Native American cultures, it hasn't translated to mentoring as we traditionally think of it from a more Anglo perspective. So it's been cool to watch that. I have learned so much. I have to tell you, our Leonard Joe, our Native American program staff person in Gallup, took me to the Navajo Nation in Window Rock to see the council headquarters and a couple of other places that are important to him, and I was blown away. I mean, I think that kind of openness, I hope to encourage in everybody that works with us, that, you know, to look through other people's eyes.
And whatever the culture is and everything else, one thing that is consistent for Big Brothers and Big Sisters is that the kids who were in that program do much better out in life and in school and so on.
They do. Kids who have been matched through Big Brothers Big Sisters for a year or more are 46% less likely to start using drugs, 27% less likely to start drinking, 52% less likely to skip a day of school, and 37% less likely to skip a class. They're less likely to hit someone, and we've also been named as one of the blueprints for violence prevention nationwide. In northern New Mexico, all of those things are real challenges, and so a kid who has a mentor can see a different way.
Very, very interesting. That's huge.
It is, and it's a really powerful agent for change in a very simple, very within reach, you know.
Very comfortable way.
Yeah, very comfortable way. So,
a very natural way. I mean, if you think about it, the basis of all positive human interactions and phenomena are relationships between one person and another, or in small groups. That's how we become who we are. Mm-hmm.
So for anyone listening out there who wants to make a difference in a small way, in a small, big way. It's a big little world. In a small, big way.
We're getting corny now.
Yeah, we are getting corny. But I would encourage them to think about being a big.
Big Brothers Big Sisters can be found on the web at...
Just Google Big Brothers Big Sisters of Northern New Mexico.
Yeah.
That's how you'll get there.
And if you Google Big Brothers Big Sisters, you find all the different chapters all over the country, which is interesting, too, to sort of skip around. But Northern New Mexico is our chapter here. And what's the phone number?
505-983-8360.
And once again, the Mayor's Ball is on October 16th. Jane Bernard and Andrea Fisher Merrill, thank you so much for being with us on Radio Cafe.
Thank you for having us.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe, and my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, jazz.